Welcome to the Naracast Tech Briefing. I am looking at the pricing sheet for Google's new Gemini model, and it feels like we are crossing a threshold where raw speed is suddenly carrying a premium price tag.
It is an interesting pivot. We have gotten used to the flash models being the budget-friendly option for high-volume tasks, but this new release is positioned very differently. It is almost blurring the line between the lightweight models and the heavy-duty reasoning engines.
Exactly. And on the developer side, we are seeing some growing pains with local AI agents. There is a fascinating discussion happening around Claude Code right now about what happens when your AI assistant is trapped on a single machine, but you need to work across a laptop, a desktop, and a server.
It really highlights the tension between the security of local execution and the convenience of cloud-synced memory. Plus, we are going to look at a massive infrastructure shift over in Europe, where a coalition is trying to build a sovereign payment network to rival the big US credit card companies.
A lot of ground to cover. Let us get into it.
Google just dropped Gemini 3.5 Flash, and as you mentioned, it went straight to general availability on May 19th, skipping the usual preview phase we have come to expect. That in itself is a massive signal about their confidence in this model's stability.
Right. And the focus here is heavily on agentic workflows and coding tasks. Google is citing some impressive benchmark numbers. It hit 76.2% on Terminal Bench 2.1 and 83.6% on MCP Atlas. They are clearly optimizing this to not just answer questions, but to actively complete multi-step work across different applications. It is a paradigm shift from a passive oracle to an active participant in the software development lifecycle.
That capability comes at a cost, though. The pricing is set at $1.50 per million input tokens and $9 per million output tokens. That is significantly higher than previous iterations of the Flash series. Historically, the Flash moniker implied a lightweight, budget-friendly model meant for high-volume tasks where you did not necessarily need state-of-the-art reasoning.
Exactly. It forces developers to ask if the performance gains in agentic execution justify that price jump, especially for those who are relying on the Flash tier specifically for cheap, high-volume processing, like log analysis or bulk text summarization. But the specs are robust. It retains the 1 million token context window and pushes the max output to 65,000 tokens, which is crucial if you have an agent writing extensive code files or generating complex, multi-layered reports.
The broader implication, though, is how Google is rolling this out to consumers. Gemini 3.5 Flash is now the default model for both the Gemini app and the AI mode in Google Search. That means every single query going through those interfaces is now being processed by an engine built for agentic workflows.
Which is a fascinating choice from a product strategy perspective. If this model is highly optimized for complex, autonomous, multi-step tasks, making it the default for everyday consumer search queries seems like massive overkill. Most people just want a quick summary of a recipe, the score of a basketball game, or a brief answer to a factual question. They do not need an agentic workflow to tell them how tall the Eiffel Tower is.
Unless Google's long-term play is to slowly introduce those agentic capabilities into standard search without the user explicitly asking for them. Imagine searching for a flight and having the AI not just find the options, but actively navigate the booking process in the background, filling out forms and comparing dynamic pricing in real time. But in the short term, running a more expensive, complex model for simple queries has to be hitting Google's compute budget hard.
It is a calculated risk. They want the default experience to feel noticeably smarter and more capable than the competition. If a user does happen to ask a complex, multi-part question, the system will not fall over. But it does blur the distinction they previously established between the Flash models and the Pro models. Flash used to mean fast and cheap. Now it seems to mean fast and highly capable, but with a corresponding price tag that reflects that new reality. Speaking of AI agents, there is an interesting structural debate happening in the Claude Code community right now. Claude Code is Anthropic's agentic command line tool, designed to automate coding tasks directly from the terminal. It has been gaining a lot of traction, but it has a fundamental architectural limitation that is causing friction.
It is a powerful tool, but it is entirely tied to a specific terminal process on a specific machine. Issue 49657 on their GitHub highlights this exact problem. A user pointed out that there is no unified way to see what is running, pick up work on a different device, or send a prompt to the right machine if you are jumping between a desktop, a laptop, and maybe a remote home server.
Right. The core issue is that Claude Code stores session data, memory, and configuration locally. It is keyed to absolute file system paths on that specific hard drive. So if you start a complex refactoring job on your work laptop at the office, you can't just open your home desktop later that evening and seamlessly continue that conversation. Each machine is an isolated island, completely unaware of the context built up elsewhere.
The community has actually stepped in to fill this gap because the demand for continuity is so high. There are workarounds like Claude Sync, which is an open-source CLI tool that uses encrypted cloud storage to manually sync the .claude directory across different machines. But users are explicitly requesting native, account-bound synchronization directly from Anthropic, similar to how the web-based Claude.ai handles cloud-synced memory.
Which brings up a fundamental conflict in the design philosophy of these tools. Anthropic built Claude Code with a heavy focus on local, file system-based execution. That is a huge selling point for enterprise users who are terrified of their proprietary code-based telemetry streaming back and forth to a cloud server just to maintain session state. They want the AI to operate strictly within their controlled environment.
Exactly. If Anthropic implements native cloud sync for these terminal sessions, they have to navigate a massive security and privacy hurdle. How do you sync context without syncing sensitive code snippets? But relying on third-party tools like Claude Sync is not ideal for enterprise environments either, because you are introducing an unvetted dependency into your workflow just to get basic device handoff.
It really points to a necessary evolution in how we think about AI developer tools. Right now, the paradigm is entirely session-based. You open a terminal, you run a command, the agent does a thing, and when you close the terminal, that specific context window is largely closed with it. But developers want persistent, cross-platform project management. They want the AI to understand the project as an entity, regardless of which physical keyboard they happen to be typing on.
If we move to a model where the device is a first-class identity within a larger, synced environment, it changes the whole dynamic of AI assistance. The AI becomes less of a local script that you trigger and more of an omnipresent team member that follows you from machine to machine. But getting there without compromising the local-first security model that makes Claude Code appealing in the first place is going to be an incredibly tough engineering challenge for Anthropic. Let us shift gears to a massive infrastructure project unfolding in Europe that has huge implications for the global financial tech stack. The European Payments Initiative, or EPI, and its digital wallet, Wero, are quietly building a pan-European payment network explicitly designed to bypass US-based card networks like Visa and MasterCard.
This is not just a small pilot program. This is a massive, coordinated coalition. They are partnering with major national payment systems that already have deep market penetration, like Bizum in Spain, Bancomat in Italy, MBWay in Portugal, and Vips Mobile Pay in the Nordics. Combined, this coalition represents a footprint of about 130 million active users spread across 13 different countries.
The timeline they are operating on is incredibly aggressive for a project of this scale. They are aiming to enable cross-border peer-to-peer payments by 2026, and then roll out full e-commerce and point-of-sale capabilities in 2027. The technical foundation here is a central interoperability hub that connects these existing national systems using SEPA instant credit transfer rails.
It is essentially a massive pay-by-bank infrastructure. You are sending money directly between bank accounts, which completely cuts out the traditional card networks and the interchange fees associated with them. Europe has relied on Visa and MasterCard for the vast majority of its digital transactions for decades. That reliance has raised serious concerns in Brussels about data sovereignty, economic leverage, and overall strategic autonomy.
The strategy here is actually very smart. They are not trying to force 130 million people to download a brand new app and abandon the tools they already trust. Instead, they are linking existing national champions.
people in Spain already use Bizum daily. People in the Nordics already use Vips. By maintaining those distinct brands and user experiences, but wiring them together on the back end, they drastically reduce the friction of adoption.
But there is a valid, highly technical question to be asked about how much true sovereignty this actually achieves. Even if the payment rails are European and the transaction settles locally, the system still relies heavily on US-owned infrastructure to function. The apps themselves live on Apple's iOS and Google's Android operating systems. The back-end systems likely rely on cloud providers like AWS, Google Cloud, or Microsoft Azure.
That is the ultimate paradox of digital sovereignty right now. You can localize the transaction layer, you can keep the data within European borders, but the foundational tech stack is still largely American. Still, keeping the transaction data and the interchange fees within the European banking system is a significant economic shift. The real test will be whether this coalition can actually compete with the sheer convenience, speed, and global acceptance of Visa and MasterCard.
Right. It is one thing to use this network to seamlessly split a dinner bill with a friend while you are vacationing in Italy. It is another thing entirely to use it to buy a coffee at a local terminal or to rely on it when you travel outside of Europe. Visa and MasterCard have spent half a century building universal point-of-sale acceptance and robust fraud protection systems.
That 2027 target for point-of-sale integration is going to be the absolute make-or-break moment. If merchants find the fees significantly lower and the settlement times faster, they might actively push consumers toward using Wero. But displacing ingrained consumer habits at the checkout counter is notoriously difficult, even with government backing.
All right, let us hit a few more stories real quick before we wrap up.
Sounds good.
Going back to Claude Code, there's an interesting feature request, issue 6924, asking for a UI-based viewport selector in the application preview panel. Currently, developers have to ask the AI to run a preview resize command to check different mobile or desktop breakpoints.
It is a classic human-in-the-loop friction point. The AI can programmatically resize the window, but typing out a command adds an unnecessary conversational round trip. Moving that control to a simple drop-down in the UI shows that even in agentic workflows, sometimes traditional direct manipulation is just faster.
Exactly. Not everything needs to be a chat prompt.
Another Claude Code issue, number 51350, is requesting the ability to enable marketplace auto-updates via the settings.json file. Right now, auto-updates for plugins can only be toggled per user through the terminal UI.
This is a big deal for platform engineers. If they cannot enforce auto-updates centrally via managed configurations, teams risk using outdated internal tools, leading to version divergence. It highlights the tension between giving individual developers autonomy and maintaining standardized, secure environments across an enterprise.
Centralized control is inevitable as these AI coding tools move from individual experiments to team-wide deployments.
Over in the social media space, Meta is facing criticism for geo-blocking the Facebook and Instagram accounts of human rights organizations, including AlQST and several individual activists in Saudi Arabia and the UAE. This has been happening since April 30th, 2026.
Meta has reportedly restricted over 100 pages and accounts, citing compliance with local cybercrime laws and government requests. It is a stark reminder of the ongoing conflict between tech platforms' stated commitments to freedom of expression and their willingness to adhere to authoritarian local laws to maintain market access.
Users are just getting notifications saying Meta acted after a legal assessment. It raises serious questions about their due diligence process for these government demands.
Finally, developer Andrew Workington has launched the Virtual OS Museum. It is a curated collection of over 1,700 pre-installed operating systems and applications spanning from 1948 to the present.
This is a massive software preservation effort. It is distributed as a single 174-gigabyte Linux virtual machine with a custom launcher that handles all the configuration and snapshots. It completely eliminates the technical barriers of setting up old emulators.
It really changes how we interact with digital history.
Instead of just archiving static files, it makes these historical computing environments genuinely accessible and living software for anyone to explore.
That is a wrap for today's briefing.
Thanks for listening. If you want to dive deeper into any of these stories, you can find the links in our show notes.
We will be back tomorrow with more updates from the edge of the tech industry.
Until then, keep building.